You're listening to the Emerging Leaders Podcast, hosted by the Salem Area Chamber of Commerce.
Hello, my friends. Jacob Espinoza here. On today's episode of the podcast, we have audio from a forum I was fortunate to host about how the best workforces in Oregon attract and retain talent. We had leaders from four of the top 100 employers in Oregon speak about the tactics and the things that they're doing to create an amazing work culture. We had Peter Harris from Tycor Title. Tina Irvine was there. She's the owner and managing partner at Express Employment Professionals. Rick Martin, founder of Mid Valley Commercial Construction, and also Jason John, who is COO of Hagen Hamilton Insurance Solutions. They brought a ton of value, had incredible insights on the things they're doing. What I love about an episode like this is you have people that are in the mix, the people that are in the game. They're experiencing the exact same stresses and obstacles that all the business owners in our community, but they're still managing to create an incredible culture for their team to work in. So thank all four of our panelists, and I'm glad you have the opportunity to enjoy it on this podcast. Appreciate you.
A big topic right now, keeping our talented people, keeping our premier talent. Let's start with you, Rick. What are you seeing working right now and keeping people with your organization? You've had extremely low turnover, which is so impressive.
So our company, we have about 10 people that work in the office that are non-union and about 100 field employees. So, as far as keeping the office people, which we have virtually no turnover, is we have a flexible work schedule, open communication, all those type of things. Competitive compensation, great benefits. We pay 100% health insurance. We make about a 15% retirement contribution for everyone. So that keeps the people in the office. Out in the field, it's a little bit different. We're a union contractor, so everyone's a union member. But we pay semi-annual bonuses and include everyone down to the first-term apprentice out in the field. Based on the hours that they work. It's a pure profit sharing plan. We take 20% of our profits and pay it out to them. Word of mouth gets around about that. We're very focused on safety. We're a relatively small company, but we have a full-time safety manager. Very important in construction. We spend a lot of money on tools, keep the best tools for the guys. The union employees, they provide some of their own hand tools, but we provide a majority of new tools for them. And the word of mouth spreads real quickly. We have a lot of leaders in the field from other companies that reach out to our field operations. And when we bring those people over, they tend to bring a team with them.
I love it. No, I think there's so much power in creating raving fans within your workforce. I worked for T-Mobile the last 13 years, and we had an incredible CEO, John Ledger, that joined us and really just turned the company around. And something that he said is that if you want to have a successful business, listen to your customers, listen to your employees, shut up and do what they tell you. And I mean, that's exactly what I'm hearing you saying as well. Anything you'd add to that, Tina, as far as keeping your talented employees, but also how has that changed over the last year and a half?
Yeah, so for our office in particular, we have found that it's really important to have an alignment of what I need from them as my employee and what they need from me as my staff. And so, as we've mentioned many times today, asking really good questions and not assuming that you know what they need, and that doesn't always come in the form of a paycheck. Sometimes it's more importantly now than ever, are we supporting them and meeting them where they're at? So if for me, my staff has all of them have children. They're all under the age of 5. And so when they get sent home because they got exposed to COVID, I, as an owner, I need to be very patient with that. And I need to understand that my employee is doing their part. And if I get frustrated with that, or I feel like their absence is going to impact my business negatively, then those employees aren't going to feel supported. And they're going to leave very quickly because there's other employers out there that provide flexible schedules and are able to give that employee what they need in the moment. So really partnering with them and asking them what they need and then doing your best to give it to them. The other thing that I know we have found is we kind of, at least in the staffing side, we're frontline workers, right? So when pandemic hit and so many of the businesses around us had to shut down for all of the different reasons, my staff showed up every day. And so as an owner, I had to keep telling myself, these guys are the ones helping the world go around right now. And so the only thing I can do is give them support, give them extra time off. My employees were stressed. Everybody is stressed right now. They feel overwhelmed by the things they can't control. And so really helping them in their day to understand the things they can control is essential to them not feeling overwhelmed and not feeling the necessity to fight or flight. And that's when we see people leave. They feel overwhelmed. They don't know how to manage through it. And they'll tell you they're leaving for another job for more money. But that's not usually the case. It's usually because they're overwhelmed and they don't feel heard.
Yeah, sometimes they don't care enough to be honest, right, in that exit interview. It's just you have four options. I'll just click one. That's the first option. And you don't always get the best data, you know, as an employer.
Yeah, but I would also argue that employees don't feel safe giving good feedback, right? Or they'll, in an interview or with a team peer review, you'll give them the feedback that you feel they need to hear to be successful. But I don't think we take enough time to ask them what they think we need to be successful for them. And so in their exit interviews, when you see this scathing information, it's been building. It's not all of a sudden this person just got mad one day and went off the chain. It's been a long time building. So taking that time to read that content, even if it doesn't feel good in the moment, looking past the emotional side of it and connecting with what was being said and how can you fix that for your future employees.
Beautiful. Yeah, lack of trust, right, has so many impacts downhill as an employer. It's extremely expensive. Something that we talked about in a previous conversation, Jason, is being the eyes and ears of the company. Do you want to can you explain a little bit what that means and what that looks like in your organization?
Yeah, so we're a family owned and operated business. And so everything that we do starts with that mentality of being a family business. And for me, the main role I have is really paying attention to what is going on with my staff, what's going on internally, and what things are happening externally that might impact them. And like what Tina said, with COVID, we've had to change and be flexible and change how we do things and throw the playbook out the window. So you have to be flexible in what you're doing and ready to go at a moment's notice. So some of the things that we did beginning of COVID, I can remember going back to the week of March 17th of 2020, and everything was changing. We heard the shutdowns are coming, and our executive team, my dad, my brother, and I got together and said, we need to do something here because we can feel the weather changing. And part of that about being the eyes and ears of the organization is knowing when you need to do something and how you need to do it. So as you were saying, the uncertainty out there was palpable, and you could feel the staff worrying about their jobs. You could hear those little side conversations in the hallway of what is going to happen next. They're hearing of friends of theirs that might be losing their jobs. So what do we need to do to bring certainty to an uncertain situation? So we got together. We have annual bonuses as part of our program that were scheduled a few months out past the March date. And we said, let's move those up to this month. Let's do it today. Let's let people know that financially we are secure, that we're going to put our money where our mouth is, and we're going to share some of that bonus early, and then let's add to that bonus, let's add some more PTOs so people know that not only are we going to be okay, but it's still okay to take time off. And that was very well received. As a family business where we're very close with our employees, I can go back to that moment. It was a very almost emotional moment for our team. We had my dad, who got messages from staff members there in the office, that the message when that went out almost brought them to tears going. It was the perfect timing for that moment to say there was uncertainty and we as the employer needed to do something. The one thing that we could control, because we can't control everything, but we could control that moment, and we delivered something there that was special. So I'll always go back to that as a very special moment in our history.
And that's a powerful point. I think right now there are so many things outside of our control that it's easy to let those things consume our time and energy. But just taking a step back and thinking through, okay, what can I actually have an impact on? What are the decisions I can make that will help us be better in this spot? Great. That's a great learning moment, I think, comes with the maturity of a lot of leaders. And Peter, I'd love to hear from you. What's an example of something, an easy win that you knew you could get your team, that you learned through experience in your organization?
Easy win, huh? So my goal was to say something really dumb the first time I'm asked so that I can just shut up and listen for the rest of the time today. So So I think one of the big struggles that I have is one of the only tools that we as managers or employers have to show our gratitude and our recognition to staff is money, and money is. Money is insincere. It's boring. Everybody loves it. Everybody wants it. But it's really hard to express the gratitude that that we have as employers towards our employees just through money. So I try really hard to work with my team to. You know, when I'm doing a monthly gift of some kind for my employees to make it a little bit more personal, find something a little bit fun, whether it's an activity or a gift of some kind, just put a little bit more personal touch than just a gift card or a Visa card or something like that. And it gets stale, and having great people on my team to provide. That variety is really important. I think it was touched on here by a couple of you that you know, listen first, seek first to understand. I think that's I try to accomplish that myself and remember that as much as possible. But knowing that I don't have all the answers or anywhere near all the answers, and looking for those on my staff that that can help. So.
Yeah, people are generally pretty smart and have great ideas, especially the people that are on that, you know, baseline level or are working with that team. I love that we have the system in place of Spirit of Salem here at the Chamber, because I feel like we don't give people their flowers enough, right? A lot of times we wait until those moments where it's too late, where somebody's out of our life, and we wish, like, I wish I would have really shown that person how much I appreciated them. But we can do a better job, I think, you know, as a community, of really thinking through how do we become more proactive with gratitude? How do we make sure the people in our lives really understand how much we appreciate them? What does that look like for you? You talked about how important gratitude was. Do you have systems in place? Is it more of a just kind of on an intuition basis?
More of just intuition. Yeah, this year or over the last 20 years with the pandemic, or 20 months, we haven't been able to do some of the things that we would normally do. The summer gathering, the new year kickoff party. So still taking that resource that I would have put into those events and giving it back to staff. I'm very fortunate, though. I work for a large Fortune 500 company. Their management philosophy is to put a lot of autonomy on my position to give me the ability to do what I think needs to be done in my marketplace to make my business successful. So for me, as a leader, I get the greatest satisfaction from seeing successes in my staff, having opportunities for them, and I think it's very important in our industry that my staff always sees that there's opportunity to grow in our industry. I don't want people who are looking for a job. I'm looking for people who want a career, and in our industry, it's all on the job training. It's very specialized, and our company does a great job of providing great training resources and just making sure that I'm looking for looking first to promote from within before I'm looking for that higher level talent on the outside to bring in. So
awesome. I see a lot of head shaking on the promoting from within and the career development. Anyone want to chime in on that? We'll keep it moving. Tina, so you talked about the listening as well. What does that look like? Can you paint the picture a little bit of the different types of things that you do to make sure you do have a pulse of how your team's feeling?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be very transparent. The first thing I had to learn was to shut up. I mean, I, as a person, I think that I come with good ideas, and I think I know how to run my business, and I know what I want, and so I had to learn to just listen and just sit there, and I had to sit on my hands. I had to tell myself to not interrupt that person. You know, as a young leader, oftentimes we're promoted because of how we perform in the workplace and because of our loyalty and because of the things that we've done to be a good performer, but when you start moving into the position where now you're a leader and you're being asked to lead other people, but you're not given the skill set to do so, you make a lot of mistakes along the way. And so for me, I brought Ellie with me today, and she's learning to be my operations manager. And so what that means for me is it's important that I bring her with me. Yeah, I gotta show her what a good job looks like. Otherwise, I'm really not doing my work. And so when I think about developing my people, I even asked them, how much would you like to make, Ellie? Like, because otherwise, I don't know. It's a blind spot for me. So if I think I'm promoting her and I'm excited about her taking over my operations manager and she's scared and she's fearful and she's thinking, do I get paid more or do I just get more responsibility? You know, so it's really important to ask questions and then just sit there and listen to what they say and to be open to the feedback. And even when it's hard, eat your peas. Because if your employee is being open with you, to be honest with you and tell you the one thing no one else is ever going to tell you, that is your new favorite employee.
Yeah, the interesting dynamic of saying that you're open to feedback, but then someone gives you feedback and your immediate instinct is, well, this is why you're wrong. Like, that person's not going to give you feedback anymore. That's not going to happen, right? Just be gracious and thank them for the feedback and maybe just process in the moment. I like the analogy that you used as well. Thank you. And right now there's a big transition, right? Everybody wants to work from home. Everybody wants a hybrid job. It's not realistic. It's not possible in all roles, including construction. So Rick, what's working for you right now in recruiting employees? I prepped him with this question, so I might have framed it a little different, but.
Well, the employees that are working in the office obviously can work from home. You know, we have a lot of job sites, so they're working from the job sites too. The guys in the field, obviously they have to come to work every day. And, you know, it's back to the same type of encouragement of making sure they have the right tools, all the right materials, communicating with them what their goals are and all those things to keep them motivated and wanting to come to work. Like a lot of businesses, we had some problems even with union employees that with their stimulus checks and unemployment, they could make more money staying at home than coming to work. And I think that was a challenge for a lot of businesses. So we were encouraging them, reminding them of the bonuses, reminding them of their health insurance, reminding them of their pension plan and all those things, along with a good work environment, as good as a work environment can be out working outside.
So were you preparing your managers to have these conversations, or can you talk a little bit about how you rolled that out?
So the foremen out on the site were prepped to make afternoon phone calls, be a little more forgiving when guys are maybe coming in a little late. Obviously we had families that were exposed to COVID and they got their COVID time off. They got paid to take that time off. So it was definitely communicating to our managers and they were communicating with the crew. We have some general superintendents and it was a lot of phone calls and encouraging people to get back to work.
Beautiful. That one-on-one connection I'm hearing is a consistent theme here. And then Jason, how has recruiting changed for you in the last year and a half?
It's gotten harder. I'm sure all of you have seen that out there. It's harder and it's taking a lot longer. In fact, the last hire I made, she just started last week, and the first conversation I had with her to start this process was back in February. So it's been an interesting market out there. It's turned almost into more of a sales role where there's more convincing and we're all competing for the same smaller pool of employees out there. So it's made my job a lot more interesting, and I never planned to be in sales, but that's where I'm almost finding myself now. So beyond that, some success that we have seen, because the normal stuff doesn't seem to be working as well, putting ads out there on Indeed or Facebook or LinkedIn, you're not seeing the same kind of response you normally get. But something that has been working is having your employees be your recruiting assistants. And actually Chris McLaren, who is here with me today, my coworker and good friend, he has actually referred two applicants to us in the last 2 months, and we hired both of them. So that was a success there. And my advice on some of that would be, use your employees, because if you're trying to do it all on your own in this environment, it's very difficult. And the counter side of that is also true, that recruiting is going on in your businesses actively. So that's something we have to watch for on the backside too, is staying competitive as all of us try and do on our pay and benefits and all that. So, yeah.
Awesome. Thank you. Anybody want to add anything on recruiting? What's working right now?
I think the piece of using your staff, your existing staff, as recruiting partners is very important. I always tell my managers, especially, but all of my staff, though what we do is specialized and on-the-job training, it's not rocket science. And a lot of people can do what we do. It's a lot of stress, a lot of pressure. But the biggest thing is customer service. And if you interact with somebody at the coffee shop, the bank, the clothing store, or even the DMV, if you get great customer service from somebody, probably not DMV, remember those people, and we're always looking for talent. Whether I'm hiring that week or sometime off in the future, encourage them to keep your card and maybe submit a resume. I think that's a great resource. We bonus people for finding good recruits and referring staff after they've made it through their probationary period and looks like they're going to stay. Then yeah, we compensate staff for helping us find good staff. And I've been very fortunate, even though the pandemic has been a struggle. Much of what we've seen in society out there in the workforce is people looking for opportunities to start new careers. And again, customer service is the big thing. And if I can find good quality people to bring in, it's a great career opportunity. And I can show them through my own story in the industry what a great career opportunity is. So I've been pretty fortunate that I've brought on some really high quality new staff over the last 20 months. So
congratulations, it's challenging.
And, you know, talking about the your staff recruiting people for us from a field operations standpoint, the people working out in the field, they want to work with people that work hard. And so with the bonus plan that we have, they kind of self-police, and they will go out and recruit the best people because they want to work with the best people, not only because of the money, but because it's a lot easier for them to get their work done if they're working with good people. So I don't know that, you know, we've been in business 7 years. I don't know that we've ever called the union hall for an employee. It's all been self-referral from inside the company. So when you treat your employees well, they want to bring on people.
Absolutely, and especially the top talent, they want to work with the best people, like you said. It's kind of been an interesting dynamic with accountability because people are so scared to lose people that I feel like a lot of times they've shied away from having tough conversations, but it ends up becoming a nightmare because people that are performing at a high level, they don't want to work with people that aren't being held accountable, right? So there's kind of an interesting dynamic there, and I like the way that you touched on that. And Tina, you're kind of in an interesting situation because you have your own team, but you also have a ton of people that are working with different employees. So you see it from a lot of different sides. What are you seeing being some of the most significant differences between the teams that people want to work for and the workforces that people just don't really want to go back to?
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't want to offend anyone because I don't know who's in the room entirely. But
we don't need to use names, yeah.
Thank you. I would say we need to do a better job of onboarding, really, truly. Some of the biggest challenges I see, and I'll be honest, I think my clients appreciate my transparency and my directness, and they listen. And so when I said, hey, I understand that you need 20 people to do machine operation, I respect it. Here's the problem. When you put 20 people in a room, they don't feel special. They don't feel like they're getting individual time and attention. They feel like cattle. So if you treat people like cattle, they will leave like cattle because there's no reason for them to stay. So I think instead of just onboarding masses of people, I think we need to take more time with the quality of people that we did find and identify and give them opportunities to learn information. And if they don't get it the first couple of days, let's give them another chance, because that's the other side is I think some employers haven't quite understood yet that people aren't a revolving door, and not only is that expensive for your business, but it also is not good for your culture, because everyone in your office is looking at, well, why is everyone leaving? And if John's leaving, then maybe I should leave too. And as soon as they leave, they like you. So now they're at your competitor and they're calling John. And now John works there too. So I think it's just really important as owners and leaders and HR managers that the people bringing those individuals into your organization understand their essential function in making this person feel valued, feel like they're a part of this team from day one, and not, you'll be gone tomorrow, somebody else will be here soon. Like, it's just, that's, it's a very negative connotation when we do that to people. And so from my heart, I would love to see that changed for people.
Yeah, I think I read in a Gallup survey that having a friend that you work with is like top five reasons people stay with a team. Two of the other were mentioned on the panel today, or probably more than two, but understanding the expectations of the role was number one. Number two, having the tools and resources to do the job effectively. But I think to make sure people do understand the role, you have to have that one-on-one conversation with them. I think a lot of times there's assumed knowledge where they go through an onboarding with 20 people. You assume everybody retained all of this 8 hours worth of information. Who in here can remember 8 hours of information the first time they go through it? Nobody. We're just not designed that way. So it's challenging, right? It's very time consuming. It requires a specific skill set to understand how to onboard effectively. But to your point, you save yourself, you know, a lot of cost, you know, in the long term.
Yeah, and taking that time to help them understand the benefits that you are giving them as a valued employee, because employment is a symbiotic relationship. It's designed to be beneficial on both sides. And if your employees don't understand that part of their medical benefits is part of their total compensation, and they don't know what that dollar amount is, they think leaving for another dollar somewhere else is making up the delta, when you really, they just lost money. So really, truly, when you're giving employees comp reviews, taking the time to quantify, here's how much PTO we're giving you, and this is the dollar amount associated to it. Here's the 7 to 12 holidays we're giving you. Here's the dollar amount associated with it. We at our organization do pay 90% of our core employees' health benefit and then 50% of dependents. But that's predicated on the fact that they need to participate in our wellness program because, again, employment is symbiotic. So if I'm going to be there to help provide you with health insurance for you and your family, I would like to see you also invest in your overall all wellness. That doesn't mean just are you running or eating well. It also means your mental health, which is one of the biggest things everybody's struggling with. So,
and I think the other piece I'll add, and I love to, you know, pass it around for any closing thoughts, but when we bring people to a place where they feel supported, they leave work feeling confident, that energy goes out into the community, right? That energy goes home into their family. And so we have leaders in our organizations that can help people feel that way, can inspire people to be at their best, that understand the strengths and the value that they bring. There's this multiplying effect because now they're having that same energy when they interact with the people around them. So I appreciate all four of you so much for taking the time to be here and sharing some insights. And hopefully everybody in the audience, you know, has at least one action item they're leaving with on how they can just be maybe 1 or 2% better, you know, for the people on their teams. But any closing thoughts?
Yeah. One thing I just want to mention about culture, you can't pretend what your culture is, and it's not a motto on the wall. It's not some words. You have to execute what you believe in. And if you believe in it, that becomes your culture. So you can't pretend you have a culture that you don't have as a leader.
I love that. Thank you.
I think another thing very important is to do a lot of self-assessment and look at yourself and recognize that we all have strengths and weaknesses and what your personal weaknesses are. And when you're building your team around you, fill in some of those weaknesses. Find people that have strengths in you, areas where you're weak, and empower them to use those strengths. And when you feel comfortable finally doing that, speaking from experience, then the sense of relief that now I don't struggle with the things that I struggle with. I have somebody else who gets to struggle with those things. And it really does, I think, help your entire organization feel like, number one, there's opportunity and leadership is real in the organization, and it helps us lead better where we are strong.
Thank you so much for tuning in to the Emerging Leader Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you're subscribed, leave a review. 5-star reviews mean a ton if you're listening on Apple, and share it with a friend. You know, share it with 5 friends. We're looking to get the word out. We also want to hear from you. What are the topics that are most important that you'd like to be hearing about? Who are the guests that you think would bring a ton of value to this podcast? Shoot me an email, jacob@salemchamber.org. I want to hear from you. Enjoy your day.